on 1116 SEN, a summer of cycling update for BikeBug, Australia's number one bike shop online and in store, bikebug.com.
And he's no Johnny come lately just with the summer of cycling. He's here all year round talking cycling. Ian Cohen joins us. G'day, Koza.
Yeah, g'day, Kev. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Yourself, you're up in the wilds of Buninyong?
We are in the wild of Buninyong, and I can tell you it is toasty warm, and the flies are breeding for Australia here. So it is quite amazing. No, no, very, very warm. But look, great conditions, but obviously for those that are actually doing the time trial, the test of truth, as it's known, they are certainly having to work very, very hard to try and achieve the outcomes they want. We've had Catherine Garfoot, who, of course, won last year, has taken out the women's title. She's just a veteran and a champ, and just goes from strength to strength. She won it by a minute and 55. I mean, that is a monstering, an absolute monstering. In the under-23s, there was only 15 seconds separated the podium there. So someone winning it by a minute 55 is just enormous. So, look, we're expecting, obviously, a big couple of days here. We've got a bit of a lay day tomorrow. There'll be a bit of media around. Then there's the Grand Fondo, which people can still register for. If they want to drive up to Ballarat, they can register in person at Sousa Park for the Grand Fondo. And then on Sunday, of course, is the road race. And that's when it all gets very serious with laps around Mount Buninyong. But, Kev, I'm not going to take up any more of your time because I have cycling royalty sitting right here. I'm going to actually go and get him off his throne. This is what he's sitting up on stage. The adoring masses come along. It is the voice of cycling, which is Phil Liggett. So, Kev, I'll hand it over to Phil, and he has forgotten more than you and I will ever know about the two wheels. So here he is.
Ain't that the truth? Ian Cohen there, making way for, as he said, a bit of cycling royalty here with Phil Liggett. Good afternoon, Phil.
Good afternoon, guys. And he's right what he said about the flies. It's the only country in the world that has the smallest flies and the biggest annoyance rate.
Hey, Phil, just on that, you must have the flies and bugs and all those things in all those cycling events. Well, is the Australian fly the most annoying, or surely there's something overseas that beats it?
It's head and wings over everybody else. I travel the world each year with following cyclists south in the African continents, all over Europe. There's no flies like the Aussie flies. Maybe that's why I keep coming back.
Phil, as you head into 2017, what are you excited about? What are you looking forward to in cycling for the coming 12-month period?
Well, it all starts here, and it has done now for quite some time. This is the 11th year, for example. The nationals for the Aussies have been in Ballarat and Buninyong, and the council are fighting hard to make sure it stays here for as long as they can see. But it's a good atmosphere here. Difficult for the Aussies because they've got to get form for these championships, and of course the Europeans have still got the feet up and the slippers on in bad weather. It starts to get real when we get down to the Tour Down Under, and these days we've now got the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race, which follows on from the Tour Down Under. They're both given World Tour status now, so the top riders are here. Peter Sagan's been here for at least 2 weeks now, the world champion, and the bike riders love Australia now, which is what the big fear was back in the late 90s. They would never come to the Aussie summer because we were afraid of the hot weather. But now we move on gently from here. We go into Asia for races. I lost the Tour of Qatar this year, so I hope the Asian rot is not setting in because they've been spending big bucks to attract cycling and other sports, as you know.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden they're cutting back on their budgets because the oil's not what it used to be. And so they've cancelled the Tour of Qatar. So that's one race out the calendar. But then we move back to Europe and the chill of February, March, and gradually the usual program ensues then. The Aussies try to live on the form that they've got this week and take it back to Europe, and we build ourselves for the Tour de France. And I'm hoping that this year we've seen lots of good things from Orica Scott over the years, the team that started back in 2012 from Australia. Achieved all ambitions so far except winning the Tour de France. They've now got a rider on the team, Esteban Chavez, a Colombian, who can win the Tour de France, and it might be this year.
Okay. Phil, the tour here in Australia, you mentioned that the weather conditions might have frightened a few riders off in the past. Are we gaining in credibility and standing around the world with these events that we've got coming up in the next few weeks?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the fight is on at the moment because, as you know, Adelaide's starting to bake again. We've had a lot of years of very lucky weather down there. The ovens have been turned down whenever they tore down under starts, and it's been beautiful racing conditions. But we've gone through the difficult period now. The riders love the standard of organisation, which is second to none. The riders are well looked after. It's what we call a star race, so they stay in the same hotel every night and go to a different course. And this is what they want at this time of the year. Because they travel the world once the racing gets underway. And no, I think now it's they no longer talk about the weather. They just want to be in Australia at this time of the year.
Is it a place where a rider can come with the team and start to emerge as a star of the future in a couple of years' time, but they get the kind of start here?
Yeah, well, it is happening because, for example, the British team, they come now 2 days after Christmas and they base in Bendigo. And they do, they've done this last 3 or 4 years, and they literally cleaned up last week in the Mitchelton Bay Classic races. So they're starting to show dividends now, and they intend to continue using Australia as their training camp. Other teams, it's now being suggested that they should come and choose their areas around Australia, make their early season training camps here. Why not? You're in lovely weather.
Yeah.
Why go and go to a ski resort and break your leg skiing or something? You may as well come out and enjoy riding your bike here. So the world of cycling has gone crackers, to be honest. It's become a major sport around the world. The Aussies are right up there at the top of this sport, and everybody's riding a bike. In London now, there really is more chance you get knocked over by a bicycle in the city centre than a car, because there's thousands commute on bicycles now.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. It's not a bad thing for the planet either in many, many ways. Phil, you mentioned how much more presence the Australian riders have around the world on the world circuit now. We're only talking about this yesterday in terms of, 20 or so years ago, apart from Skippy Anderson, there was not an Australian bike rider you would have known, or we didn't really have a world-class one. Now we have literally dozens in that top echelon, yes. The way the sport's grown, which you must have seen develop and must be really happy about.
I've loved it, but I'm not Australian, as you know, but I may as well be. I seem to spend all my time talking about the Aussies and coming here. Phil Anderson, a great friend of mine, actually spoke at his testimonial dinner in Melbourne when he retired back in the 80s. And in fact, I saw him the other day. He was, in my opinion, the best cyclist there to come out of Australia, but he never had all this publicity. People in the street never heard of Phil Anderson.
Yep.
And he did outstanding things. He goes to the Tour de France, he gets the race lead, he pulls on the Maillot Jaune for 10 days. We never mentioned it back home here, that he had an Australian leading the Tour de France. But times have changed. The Aussies in those days, two or three brave men on their own money, flew over. In the very early days, when the first two guys in 1914, two Aussies, rode the Tour de France, including Whitey Munro, they actually sailed to Europe on the boat, and they trained by riding round the deck every day. The boats were quite big, so you got a few K in. But that's how they stayed loose on the long journey to Europe, and then they still completed the Tour de France. They were the first pioneers. Now it's all changed. Now there are hundreds of Aussie cyclists who have made their name here, got their place on international teams, and not just the Oliver Scott team, but in all the European top world tour teams. And many of them, of course, relish a chance to come back to the Santos Tour Down Under with their world tour teams and all their foreign-speaking teammates and try to show the world here what they've been doing with their lives. No, it's Australia are a major player now in cycling.
Who leads the world in cycling, Phil? Who's the country that is sort of breaking barriers and doing things? And if you say Britain, honestly, I tell you, no,
that's
seriously.
Why I'm laughing.
Yeah, go on.
That's why I'm laughing, because I thought I'd never say this, but the Brits seem to be leading the way. We've won the Tour de France 4 times in the last 5 years now with 2 riders. There's no reason to think it's going to end overnight. We had a great Olympic Games. As well in Rio, and the system's working now. Team Sky are riding extremely well, and there's no reason why it should not continue, but the other teams have noted everything. And when Team Sky started to fire with all barrels, it was in fact the Australian training system that they were copying, because until then it was the Australians who were smashing the Brits, and the Brits have done it well. The wheel is turning slowly, but the Aussies are coming back, especially at Olympic level. Not a lot of medals this year for the Aussie cyclists, and I worked, of course, for Channel 7 at Rio. But we commentated on some very narrow misses and some great races when normal days they would have taken gold. So the wheel is turning. But I think the Brits are still a team to beat. The Europeans are always dangerous, but I suppose the next wave is going to come from the Baltic states. They are such tough people. They're fighting out of a lower standard of living, a lifestyle, if you like, They're all moving across Europe, and most of them go to Italy where they train on Italian squads. They're as hard as nails. And we always used to say that about the Aussies.
Yeah.
Pioneer Aussie was as hard as nails. Nothing could deter him from his target, which was to win a bike race.
The unmistakable voice of Phil Liggett has joined me from Buninyong, where the Australian Road Nationals are on at the moment. He's swatting the flies and having a chat to us at the same time. Hey, Phil, what's the next? All teams push the limits. So where's the next advantage come from in cycling to see a team, you know, rise up? We've gone through trials and tribulations in cycling, but where are they searching for the advantage?
It's very difficult to say. I feel as though the sport has worked extremely hard with all the authorities to become very transparent. We read lots of newspaper cuttings. We're talking about the British Federation, Team Sky under a cloud just at this moment. Nothing proved against them, but, you know, the smoke is starting. I feel that cycling is more transparent than ever. And as far as Sky is concerned, they've got all the doctors on hand. You're training a car engine. And you've got to give that car engine the best advantage. So training and a psychologist, the dietitians, it's such a streamlined, a very complex sport now. Once the body's right, they get the bikes right. They won't tell you the equipment on the bike. They keep them a secret until the day they race on the bike and everybody can see the situation. And it's become, to me, I'll be honest, I think it's a lot less exciting than in the old days when you have to climb up the mountains in the snow, and if you got too hard on the bike, you put the bike on your shoulder and you walked. Yeah. Well, I'm afraid I'm old and I'm going back to the 30s and 40s. Nowadays, it's streamlined. It's exactly the same in Formula One car racing. The cars are often dictating the results now rather than the great skill of the drivers.
Yeah.
Hard to say where the next top boys will come from, but the teams have had, over the winter, there's been a few sponsors pulling their coattails and merge with other sponsors to make a top team. The problem is the cost of the sport. It is expensive. We talk of F1. Well, the F1 teams in cycling are called World Tour teams. There's 22 of them. And those teams cost a fortune because you have to have a stable of 26, 28 riders, not your actual figure. And because you've got to ride all of the world's major races now. One cyclist isn't going to go through the season riding every one of the world's major races. He'll either get sick, or he'll be injured, or he's just tired. So you've got to have a big stable. But there is a limit on the stable, but the stable costs money. And in the three grand tours, you see, you've got to find 9 riders per tour. That's 27 rides with the tours of Spain, France, and Italy. So you've got to have a nice stable to fall back on, and guys who will perform for the sponsor's requirements. So it's very expensive to run the teams now, so there has been a cutback in the winter of teams.
How about in the tactical side of races like the Tour de France? Have we pushed the limits completely there? Are you seeing new things emerging from teams?
There's always new ideas, but the sprinters now, they seem to they go to win races with the fastest riders to lead them out, just like we used to see pacemakers in the 5,000 metres on the running track. They get their pacemakers who hopefully get them out of trouble, steer them through that big peloton, and then deliver them within 200 metres of the line and launch them to the finish and hope they win. And that will still apply. But now the pressure's on to win the Tour de France, not just win the daily stages. That's a different type of rider. Then the argument starts. The sprinter wants to go to the Tour de France, like, for example, Mark Cavendish, who can't climb mountains to save his life, so he can never win the Tour.
Yep.
But he's got 30 stage wins to his credit, which he's only 4 short of the record, which is 34. And he would love that record, but the teams are now thinking, we want a guy who can win the Tour de France. And that's why Orica Scott have now got this kid, Sebastian Chavez. They've nurtured him and groomed him. They've also got the Yates twins, 2 young British riders coming through. They're building a team now to win the Tour de France, so tactics might change on the way they ride these races and how they keep them safe on the build-up period. Last thing you want is a rider to crash in Paris-Roubaix or a Spring Classic and not be able to start the Tour de France. So a lot of luck involved too. But the tactics, they're always complex. A lot of the tactics I don't agree with. I don't like radios on the riders who are getting the instructions. Because a guy in the team manager in the car behind looking at the television in his car, and he's saying, Fred Bloggs is on the front. He shouldn't be there, but he is. Now get off the back and go and mark him in case he attacks. I like to think they're not robots, they're bloody great athletes, and we'll see how that goes on this year.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Phil, I'm told that you still ride everywhere.
I do. Well, I've just broken my duck for the new year. I've just come back of a 40K ride, and I'll tell you, I was tired. Oh, boy. It took quite a while to get me up off the bench to come to speak to you on the phone. It was tough today. The wind is strong. My other time trial is today. They've just finished. The men are about to start because they've got really tough conditions. And if you know the area around Ballarat and Buninyong, there's not a flat road exists in this area.
Correct.
And it sticks to the wheels of your bike. And I was thinking, thank heavens, I'm not riding the time trial today.
Phil, you're amazing. We love listening to you talk cycling. We love listening to you broadcasting cycling. May that go on for many, many years to come, and may you still be. What sort of bike do you ride these days?
Anybody who'll lend me one.
Fair enough.
It's so expensive now. I think you have to take a bond now to borrow a bike these days. But no, the Total Rush in Melbourne have always been good to me, and they delivered a lovely bike to me. And, gosh, I need every assistance I can get now, so this was nice.
Good on you, Phil. Thank you for talking to us today. We really do appreciate it.
Great pleasure. Thanks, Kevin.
Phil Liggett joining us there, the unmistakable voice of cycling. There's some broadcasters in the world of broadcasting, there's, you know, just the odd one that comes along that just defines the sport in every possible way. Whenever you hear the voice, you just know. And he's one of those, one of the legends. Thanks to Ian Cohen for organising that to us too. We really do appreciate that. Kozer, of course, part of our team here at 1160 on SEN for the summer of cycling. Thanks to Bike Bug, Australia's number one bike shop in store and online. Check them out, bikebug.com.